You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 21st. I'm Patty Calera from Drake University. Here's our first story. Red Cross, emergency blood and platelet shortage persists. With donor number remaining low, the American Red Cross continues to experience an emergency blood and platelet shortage. Fall is typically a time when the blood supply rebounds from summer blood shortages, but a surge in COVID-19 cases due to the Delta variant has contributed to the lowest donor turnout of the year. According to a press release from the Red Cross, to shore up inventory, the Red Cross must collect 10,000 additional blood products each week this month to meet hospital and patient needs. All who go in to donate in October will receive a link by email to claim a free. All who go in to donate in October will receive a link by email to claim a free Zabby signature sandwich reward or get a $5 e-gift card to the merchant of their choice. Plus, all those who give through October 31st will receive a bonus $5 e-gift card to a merchant of their choice. Since October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the Red Cross is reminding donors of the importance of blood to those undergoing treatment. According to the National Cancer Institute, roughly 1.9 million people are expected to be diagnosed with cancer in the United States this year, and more than 281,000 of those individuals will have breast cancer. Patients with breast cancer and other cancers may need blood products on a regular basis during chemotherapy, surgery, or treatment for completions. In fact, nearly 25% of the blood supply is used by cancer patients. People across the country depend on the kindness of blood donors. Donors are asked to make an appointment to give blood or platelets as soon as possible by using the Red Cross Blood Donor app, visiting redcrossblog.org, or calling 1-800-RED-CROSS. Each Red Cross blood drive and donation center follows the highest standards of safety and infection control and additional precautions, including face masks for donors and staff, regardless of vaccination status, have been implemented to help protect the health of all of those in attendance. To donate blood, individuals need to bring a blood donor card or driver's license or two other forms of identification. Upcoming blood donation opportunities in the Southwest Iowa include the following. Harrison County, October 22nd, from 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., West Harrison High School, 410 Pine Street, Mondawmin. October 28th, from 12 to 6 p.m., Woodbine High School, 501 Ware Street, Woodbine. Montgomery County, October 25, 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Montgomery County Hospital, 2301 Eastern Avenue, Red Oak. Page County, October 27, 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., Excess City Hall, 412 Iowa Avenue, Excess. October 25th, 7:45 a.m. to 1:15 p.m., Shenandoah Medical Center, 300 Pershing Avenue. October 25th, 11:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Elks Lodge, 701 S. Vermont Street, Highway 59, Shenandoah. October 26th, 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Shenandoah High School, 1000 Mustang Drive, Pottawatomie County. October 21st, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., Abraham Lincoln High School, 1205 Bonham Avenue, Council Bluffs. October 21st, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., Angels Care Home Health, 1601 McPherson Avenue, Council Bluffs. October 22nd, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., Liberty Tax, 2125 W Broadway, Council Bluffs. October 25th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Courtyard by Marriott, 2501 Bass Pro Drive, Council Bluffs. October 29th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., Council Bluffs Public Library, 400 Willow Avenue, Shelby County. October 25th, 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., Mercure Medical Center, 1213 Garfield Avenue, Harlan. A photograph is included with a hand holding 4 vials of that contain blood in them. There is a picture included with a hand wearing latex gloves holding 4 vials with blood inside of them and other vials in the background with holding more blood. SWI CASA workers reach out for volunteers. Southwest Iowa CASA will hold a CASA Plus appetizer session Monday for people interested in learning more about the court-appointed Special Advocate Program of the Iowa Child Advocacy Board. CASA volunteers and staff will be available for informal conversations with the public from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, October 25th at Barley's 114 W Broadway in Council Bluffs. A CASA volunteer is appointed by a judge to be an advocate for a child who has been neglected or abused. "We are there to see that the child's best interest is being served," said Anna Christensen, coordinator of Southwest Iowa CASA. "There is a big need for CASA volunteers that is only partially being met in the four countries." Kristen said. In September, there were 143 children in Department of Human Services care in Cass, Mills, Montgomery, and Pottawatomie counties, she said. "We were able to serve 49 of those across 40 cases. Currently, many children who go through the system do not have the benefit of a CASA volunteer to look out for them." Southwest Iowa CASA will hold another training class for volunteers in early January, Kristen said. "Our goal is to have a minimum of 10 people registered for that so we can serve more children in Southwest Iowa," she said. For more information on the application process, go to childadvocacy.iowa.gov. and drag down to CASA application under Volunteer. Applications for the January training class will be due on December 10th to allow for background checks, etc. There is then an application period when Gunmeyer helps with the initial screening of candidates and shares materials with the board. Search consultants will conduct informal interviews with candidates they see as being the most promising. The board will screen candidates based on materials and findings The board will screen candidates based on materials and findings forwarded by the search firm, then conduct video conference interviews with semifinalists and in-person interviews with finalists. Noss became superintendent of the school district on July 1st, 2019, after the retirement of his predecessor, Mark Schuer. He was previously the superintendent of Rockwood School District in St. Louis, the third largest district in Missouri with about 21,000 students. He has also served as superintendent and deputy superintendent of Mayville School District in Missouri. He earned a bachelor's degree in music at Webster University in 1983, a master's in educational leadership from Lincoln Wood University in 1997, and a doctorate in education administration at St. Louis University in 2002. He and his wife Julie, also an educator, have 2 adult daughters. Within the text, there is a picture of Nost. Council candidates discuss city growth challenges. The 4 Council Bluff City Council candidates responded to a series of questions during a forum over Zoom Tuesday afternoon, moderated by Drew Camp, CEO and President of the Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce. Healthcare professional Lindsay Danielson, retired firefighter Steve Gorman, real estate agent Joe Don Hunter, and Boys and Girls Club director Chris Patterson made a brief opening statement to begin the forum. Danielson currently holds a chair position on the Council Bluffs City Planning Commission. She was appointed in 2013. "With that experience, I have a lot of knowledge of what our city needs as far as growth, and that's primarily my platform," Danielson said. "Just getting affordable housing to our city and bringing new members to our city and keeping them here." Gorman said he plans to make city council his full-time job if he's elected. He worked as a journeyman electrician after high school and joined the Council Bluffs Fire Department when he was 30 years old. I bring to the table both private and public sector work, Gorman said. Hunter said he's always been proud to be from Council Bluffs and has had some great opportunities from the city. I've had some great opportunities, and I feel inspired to run for city council to make sure my little daughter, my nieces and nephews, and just these younger kids, the younger generation, have good opportunities as well, and a place that they can be proud to call home, he said. Peterson said he loves the culture, diversity, and history of Council Bluffs, and one of his main reasons for running is improvising economic development, knocking down barriers for small businesses. Council Bluffs is a big city, but it's got a small-town vibe, which I really love, Peterson said. We have almost everything you would need in this community without having to go outside. Camp started off the forum by asking the candidates how they will make sure positive momentum continues in Council Bluffs. Danielson touched on making sure the city is bringing the correct business to Council Bluffs. What I mean by that is making sure that the business apply the area, she said. So we want to know our market and what we're looking to obtain in those areas. If elected, Danielson wants to continue to provide affordable housing, especially for the elderly individuals who are on fixed incomes. With affordable housing, I think it's important to note that areas of town we need to update as far as our comprehensive plan, she said. Gorman brought up in the industrial park south of town how it could be utilized for new and current businesses. A local company Gorman thinks would work better in the industrial park is Conagra. I think it would be better served down in that area, he said. It would move an industry that brings trucking into neighborhoods. Gorman said he wants to work with neighborhood associations through the community and work with the 712 initiative. We have several neighborhood associations with the community that brings a lot to the table, he said. I'll work with our school board and the chamber to bring young families and increase opportunities here. Hunter noted that he's seen a lot of positive momentum through younger generations waiting to get involved in the community. We want the public to participate as much as they can and to share ideas and to engage those opportunities, Hunter said. So just raising public awareness and educating the public that communication piece is key. People get excited when they feel invested in the community and their opinions are being heard, he said. Hunter wants to keep the public engaged and involved in the city. That's what I want to bring to the table, is just that ability to be a communicator, to get with people in the community and let them know what's going on and to continue that positive momentum. Peterson joined the forum at a later time and wasn't able to respond to this question, but a previous interview with the Nonpareil, Peterson said he recognizes a movement is occurring in Council Bluffs. The movement starves for new ideas, talent, and business opportunities that should be nested in a strategy to promote growth in Council Bluffs, he said previously. Items that Peterson thinks could help Council Bluffs continue to grow are eliminating hurdles that small businesses face, providing more opportunities for youth and families, and improving the quality and functionality of the community by taking a hard look at Council Bluffs' infrastructure. Tawatomie County Emergency Management Director Doug Reed asked us, we faced increasing frequency of long-term disasters. What are each of the candidates' commitments to investing in supporting emergency and disaster preparedness and mitigation funding and resources? Hunter said this question hit home with him as his family's land along the Missouri River was wiped away by the 2011 flood. The flood came and just ate all of that up, just devastated our family and many families along that area, he said. Flooding in particular, it can just be so devastating in literally just a blink of an eye. Hunter said it's important to be prepared while being fiscally responsible. As Council Bluff is a river town, Hunter also touched on the importance of paying attention to leaves as they get recertified. But we can do a lot to prepare to mitigate some of that, and I pledge to make a commitment on whatever we can do. You know, from the city stance to standpoint, he said. Peterson said, it's important to be prepared before the flood, during the flood, and after a flood. That comes along with the financial resource team and overall getting ready to go combat the flood, he said. Again, it's hard. You have to be fiscally responsible, but I think there does have to be dollars put towards. There needs to be policies and procedures to be prepared for situations like this, he said. We can't put it on the back burner because we never know when these things are going to happen, he said. If elected, he wants a team to make sure the city is prepared, because the city needs to be prepared for the best and worst outcomes, Peterson said. Danielson said the biggest thing is being proactive and having committees in place to go over the worst possible scenarios and having plans for those situations. I don't want to be reactive. I want to be proactive and have programs in place that are set up for every situation, she said. An idea Danielson has is having different groups cover different districts and having little committees throughout the city to make sure there are specific plans in specific areas. A flood is probably going to probably happen again, and obviously we don't want it to, but making sure the leaves are up to par is a big concern, she said. Gorman said this is an issue he can bring knowledge and experience to, as he was one of the many who responded to the floods and other incidents within the community that needed mitigating. It's going to take pre-planning, education, our firefighters, working with our local fire department, police health departments, and the county health department. Gorman also touched on working with the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We got to work with the Corps of Engineering. They're the ones that control the water flow, he said. The river leaves are all controlled by the Corps. Camp asked what the candidates see as the biggest opportunity as well as the biggest challenge in Council Bluffs. Gorman said the biggest opportunity in Council Bluffs is the West Broadway Corridor system and continuing to develop the West End at a greater pace. I think one of the biggest difficulties we have in our community is sometimes getting past the impression that Omaha puts on us at times, Gorman said. You know, they look down on us a little bit, and we need to push back on that. This is a great community. Hunter said the biggest opportunity we have in really any community is the individuals within it and educating the youth within Council Bluffs and retaining them. The biggest challenge is what we're doing to retain kids, he said. It really is a multi-faced issue. Education is a piece. The workforce development, job opportunities, housing, infrastructure. But I think the biggest challenge is just what we can do to really allow as many people as possible, allow them the opportunity to invest their resources. Peterson agreed with Hunter on opportunities for youth in Council Bluffs, including programs within the community and school districts to get children ready for the future. Another opportunity he touched on was bringing more businesses to Council Bluffs. I think the biggest challenge is growth and retention. Our population hasn't grown by more than 100 and I know the last at least 30 years, he said. Getting people, attracting people to move here, retaining people, getting former residents to come back, kids that leave and go after school to come back here and start a family. The biggest opportunity, Danielson said, was the West Corridor project going on currently and how it will make the area of town more attractive and bring more people into the community. She said a big challenge is getting the community to believe in what the city is doing. Sometimes we don't always see the results, she said, and usually that can be frustrating to people when they're not really certain what we're doing. or if we actually have their best interest in mind. But you know, at the end of the day, we're all working really hard, and we have. Other questions and topics were discussed during the forum. To watch the full discussion, visit bit.ly31weofp. There is a photograph above the text with the Zoom call meeting with the candidates in the meeting as well as others who were in the meeting. Above the text, there is a photograph of the Zoom forum that took place with each candidate being on it. Iowa weather, rainfall above average temps and a freeze. Despite widespread rain across Iowa, farmers had nearly 5 days of suitable weather to continue their corn and soybean harvest as well as fall tillage and fertilizer application. And while warmer than average conditions continued last week, portions of northern Iowa experienced the first sub-freezing temperatures of the season, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nyack said Monday. Virtually, all of Iowa's corn crop has reached maturity. According to the Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report released by the USDA, 43% of corn for grain has been harvested, 1 week ahead of the 5-year average. Moisture content of field corn being harvested for grain was 18%. Iowa's corn condition rated 63% good to excellent. Despite the rain showers, soybean harvest reached 70%, 1 week ahead of the 5-year average, the USDA said. Producers in South Central Iowa have more than half their soybean crop remaining to be harvested, while producers in all other districts have at least 52% already harvested. Near normal to wetter than average conditions were reported statewide as multiple low pressure systems brought widespread rainfall across Iowa, according to Justin Glisson, state climatologist. Several southeastern and south central stations report more than 1.5 inches above normal rainfall, with some areas 2 inches above normal. Weekly rain totals ranged from 0.20 inch at Mason City in Cerro Gordo County to 3.52 inches near Drakesville in Davis County and at Sigourney in Keokuk County. The statewide weekly average precipitation was 1.13 inches, while the normal is 0.56 inch. Topsoil moisture levels, however, remain a rated 8% very short, 34% short, 57% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture levels 16% very short, 38% short, and 46% adequate, with surpluses reported. Unseasonably warm temperatures also remain across Iowa, with departures above 4 degrees in eastern Iowa. The statewide average temperature was 54.9 degrees, 2.1 degrees above normal. Oskaloosa in Mahaska County observed the week's high temperature of 85 degrees October 10th, 18 degrees above normal. Sibley in Osceola County reported the week's low temperature of 28 degrees October 17th, 7 degrees below normal. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 21st on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Patty Caldera from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. Obituaries. Anne Mulgard Tedesco. Anne Mulgard Tedesco of Council Bluffs passed away October 18, 2021. Anne was born April 23rd, 1932, to Emil and Violet Thompson Mulgard. Graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School in 1950, she worked at Mutual of Omaha for 25 years and retired in 1997. Anne married Andy Tedesco January 1st, 1954. They were married for 49 years before his passing in 2003. She was on the board of Council Bluffs Police Advisory for 12 years. Anne is preceded in death by her mother, Violet, in 1934, father Emil in 1968, sister Edna Shaka in 2004, step-grandson Jake Jacobson in 2018. She is survived by son David, Vicky, of Harrisonville, MO, son Paul Kim of Council Bluffs, daughter Carol Ann Kenny, Jacobson grandson Tyler Tedesco, step-great-grandson Jordan, all of Council Bluffs. Memorial service Friday 5 p.m. with visitation starting 1 hour prior at 4 p.m. at the Mayor Funeral Home Chapel. Anne's wishes were to be cremated and be placed beside Andy's at Trinity Cathedral Columbarium in Omaha. Memorials to Council Bluffs Canine Program. Helen G. Baker. Helen G. Baker, age 102, passed away Tuesday, October 19, 2021, at Bethany Lutheran Home. Helen was born November 30, 1918, in Council Bluffs to the late Gordis and Emma Bretz and graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School. Helen married Clifford Baker on May 12, 1940, and together owned and operated People's Produce Company in Omaha, and prior to that, Iowa Creamery and Produce in Council Bluffs. Helen was a member of Emmanuel Lutheran and St. John Lutheran Churches and PEO. She is preceded in death by husband Clifford in 2000, brothers Robert, Jack, and Tom Bretz, sister Jean Peterson, and her parents. Helen is survived by daughter Sandra Gary Branson, son James Larry Baker, two granddaughters Susie Fisher and Tammy Patridge, all of Council Bluffs. Four great-grandchildren, Ashley Patridge, Amanda Caden, Shelby Fisher, and Matt Fisher. Three great-grandchildren, Peyton Randolph, Isabella, and Jack Caden, sister Patricia of California. Graveside services, Saturday 2 p.m., Richwood Cemetery. Family and friends will gather at the Walnut Hill Reception Center at 1:45 p.m. for procession to Richwood Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Emmanuel Lutheran Church and or St. John Lutheran Church. Margie Lee Jensen. Margie Lee Jensen, a beautiful lady full of grace and humor, was welcomed into heaven on October 20, 2021 at Bethany Heights Assisted Living Center. At 98 years young, Marge was known for her cheerful nature and ever-present smile. Marge was born in Omaha. She graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School in Council Bluffs. She became the city girl introduced to farm life when she married Howard Jensen. She and Howard were active members of the Underwood, Iowa community and the Underwood Lutheran Church for many years. In her younger years, she supported their farm life by preparing meals for family and hired help, drove lunch out to the fields, and always made sure coffee and cookies were available for drop-in visits from friends and family. All of this she accomplished while raising her three children. Once her youngest was in junior high, Marge became secretary at Underwood High School. She later worked at and retired from Farm Service Coop. In retirement, Marge was a volunteer at Jeannie Edmondson Hospital. She was a caretaker to many loved ones as parents, siblings, aunts, and uncles grew older and needed help. Her love and generosity will be forever remembered. Known for her most recent tagline, "Have some fun along the way," Marge would not want you to mourn, but but to celebrate the lives she was blessed with. We ask that guests not feel obligated to wear dark colors. Marge was colorful and full of life, and she would love for us to reflect that. Bright colors and fun jewelry are more than welcome. Marge was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Howard, son, Gary, and son-in-law, Terry Mullenberg. Other special family members preceding her in death were her mother, Irma, sister, Dorothy, brothers, Robert and Jim. Marge was a loving mother and a shining example to her surviving daughters, Linda Mullenberg and Becky Dwight Breckel, and daughter-in-law, Susan Jensen. She took great joy participating in the lives of her surviving grandchildren, Jason Amy Adams, Kelly Corey Birkenpaz, Whitney Kirks, Jacob Amanda Jensen, and Joe Mindy Jensen, as well as her many great-grandchildren. She is also survived by her sister-in-law Nancy, many nieces, and nephews. Funeral service is at the Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Saturday, October 23, 2021, at 10 a.m. Visitation will be during the hour prior to the service. It is in the Grange Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Underwood Lutheran Church. Scotty Lee Clark Sr., born June 13, 1957, died October 16, 2021. Preceded in death by his father, Lyle Charles Clark Jr. Survived by mother Elizabeth Eloise Clark, Freddin, spouse Michelle A. Salerno, children Melissa Clark Tracy, Scott L. Clark Jr., Crystal McPeak Bill, Jess Jackson, Jenny O'Banion Gabe, 14 grandchildren, 1 great-grandson, sister Penny Van Alst Vincent, 2 nephews, Brian and David Clark. Visitation will be Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. with funeral service Saturday at 1:30 p.m. all at West Lawn Hillcrest Funeral Home. Donations to be made to the Carter Lake Park and Recreation Youth Sports Programs. In the name of Scotty Clark. Joshua K. Rothmeyer. Joshua K. Rothmeyer, age 47, of Carter Lake, Iowa, passed away October 18, 2021, at Nebraska. Joshua K. Rothmeyer, age 47, of Carter Lake, Iowa, passed away October 18, 2021, at Nebraska Medicine in Omaha. Josh was born August 17, 1974, in Perry, Iowa, to Ronald and Sheila Alexander Rothmeyer. He graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School in 1992. Josh was a driver from Driggers Towing. He was a member of Our Lady of Carter Lake Catholic Church. Josh is survived by his daughter, Mercedes Rothmeyer, parents Ron and Sheila Rothmeyer, twin brothers Sean, Wendy Rothmeyer, Shane, Lindy Rothmeyer, brother Damien, Heather Rothmeyer, all of Carter Lake, nieces and nephews. Memorial Mass, Saturday, 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Carter Lake Catholic Church. A lunch will immediately follow the Mass in the parish hall. The family will direct memorial contributions. Sports. Rams run on to state. Glenwood Cross Country qualifies both teams to state. Glenwood Cross Country started the postseason with a bang, placing first in both the boys and girls races at the Class 3A state qualifying meet on Wednesday in Brunsville. The boy team edged out the number 5 team in the state, Mock Floyd Valley, by 4 points after 3 runners placed in the top 5. Today we put together our best team effort this season, Glenwood boys head coach Todd Peverell said. Brian Keller led the race until the last 50 meters. Liam Hayes was right on Brian's shoulder until about 800 meters left. Andrew Smith got a cramp in his leg about at that mile and a half and fought through and fell back to about 20th and fought back up to 5th. That was fabulous that we did that. The rest of the guys had great races too. I'm very pleased with the way they ran. The girls defeated Spencer by 8 points, with all 5 scoring runners finishing in the top 17. I am beyond proud of these girls, Glenwood girls head coach Marissa Clinton said. We came in ranked number 13 and beat the number 10 MOC Floyd Valley and number 7 Spencer ranked teams. Our girls had a goal in mind, and they came to compete. We had 3 individual qualifiers and 2 who just missed the cut. The girls all run so well. This is the first time in school history that the boys and girls teams are co-champions of the state qualifying meet, so that was exciting too. Sophomore Brian Keller led the boys with a time of 16 minutes and 35 seconds to play second, and freshman Madeline Berglund placed the girls with a time of 19:31 to finish second. In addition, the top 15 runners in each race and the top 3 teams qualified for state. The state meet will be held on October 29 at Fort Dodge. Acorn qualifies for state. Lewis Central sophomore takes fourth at districts. Lewis Central sophomore Ethan Acorn punched his ticket to the state cross-country meet on Wednesday at the Class 4A district meet in Ankeny, finishing in fourth place with a time of 16 minutes and 4 seconds. It's exciting. He's been solid all year long, LC head coach Taylor May said of Acorn. He had the goal all year of winning conference. He got that last week. He had the goal of qualifying for state. He accomplished that today. He got some big goals for next week up at Fort Dodge. I'm very excited and happy for him. Acorn was the only Titan to qualify, as the rest of the Lewis Central runners saw their season end. Sophomore Cade Dierks was the second fastest on the boys' team with a time of 17:26, placing 25th. The boys finished 5th as a team. Cade Dierks had another great race today, May said. He's improved so much from last year. It was great to see him finish in the top 25 today. Luke Woltman had another great race. He really came on strong for us to end the season. Jonah Churchill closed out his career for us. He was a great runner for us the last 4 years. Marshall Arkfeld was another freshman up there. We're very happy. We're really excited with where the kids are going. Jonah was our only senior. We're pretty young other than that. We're really excited about the future is going to go with those guys. Freshman Maya Humlick led the girls to a 6th place team finish after running a 21:10 for 25th. Maya has been one of our leaders all year as a freshman, May said. She had another solid outgoing. It was a great freshman year for her. I wished Mary could have been there. Mary was up there too for us, but she's dealing with a little bit of a hip injury, so she wouldn't be able to run today. Having Maya up there and coming back after an injury, she was good for us today. Olivia Arkfield was another one that was up there strong for us. Same thing on the girls' side. We have no seniors, so we'll have all those girls back. We're very excited to see what they can do next year, too. Sioux City North won the boys' race to qualify for state along with Ankeny Continual and Ankeny. Valley qualified 3 runners on the boys' side, sophomore Evan McClinton, sophomore Jackson Bergman, and junior Aiden Limbeck. Sixth City East Ryan Campbell also earned a spot at a state. On the girls' side, Ankeny Centennial, Valley, and Ankeny qualified as teams, with Centennial winning the meet by 1 point. Sixth City East senior Kaya Downs and sophomore Ivy Milhaff took spots as individuals along with Sixth City North junior Elizabeth Jordan. The Class 4A state meet will be held on October 29 at Fort Dodge. Moon Verkotiki shine at Carroll Duel. Council Bluffs swimming freshman Cameron Moon and sophomore Elena Verkotiki picked up wins on Tuesday in a duel at Carroll, but it wasn't enough as CB fell 97.5 to 52.5. Moon picked up victories in the 200-yard freestyle with a time of 2 minutes and 21 seconds, and in the 100 fly with a 1:16.51. Verkotiki won the 100 free with a 57.80. Council Bluffs will be in action next at 7 p.m. on Tuesday in the Council Bluffs Swimming Championships against Lewis Central at Lewis Central. Revived Astros seize control of ALCS. Boston Framber Valdez lost his perfect game and then bounced the following pitch off the next batter's leg. Astros manager Dusty Baker decided it was time for a chat. "That's the time when you've really got to settle him down," Baker said. "I said, hey, you're the best. Just be natural and do your thing. I didn't say a whole bunch to him." It was enough to give Valdez through the inning and more. Perfect through four, the Houston left-hander took a two-hit shutout into the seventh and became the first pitcher this postseason to complete eight innings, leading the Astros over Boston 9-1 on Wednesday for a 3-2 lead in the AL Championship Series. Jordan Alvarez had three hits and three RBIs for Houston, which could clinch a trip to the World Series with a victory at home on Friday night. The Red Sox need a win to force a deciding seventh game on Saturday. "We came back to Boston exactly where we wanted to be. We were 1-1, Red Sox starter Chris Sale said. "Not in a good spot going back to Houston. There's no denying that. But this team has won two games in the playoffs back-to-back before, and we think we can do it again." One day after the Astros scored seven runs to break a ninth inning tie, they hung another crooked number on the Fenway Park scoreboard, chasing Sale while scoring five runs in the sixth. Alvarez, who homered in the second and singled in the fourth, had a two-run double to break things open. That was plenty for Valdez, who extended the staff's shutout streak to 14 straight innings before Rafael Devers homered with one out in the seventh. One of just three hits for Boston. The left-hander departed after retiring the Red Sox in order in the eighth. "If a guy's dealing, you just let him keep dealing," Baker said. "Today, it was in the hands of Framber. Everybody talks about momentum, but momentum is controlled by the pitcher. If the pitcher's dealing, all the momentum's gone." In all, Valdez gave up one run on three hits, one walk, and a hit batter, striking out five. He was also the first opposing pitcher to last eight innings in a postseason start at Fenway since Cleveland's Charles Nagy when eight in the 1998 Division Series. Ryan Stanek pitched a perfect ninth while the rest of Houston's relievers restated. Astros starter had not lasted three innings all series, pitching to an 1890 ERA in the first four games and giving up 10 homers, including a record three grand slams. Valdez was not much better, allowing two earned runs in two-third innings in game one. "I didn't get frustrated at all. I wasn't down on myself," Valdez said. "What I did was I decided I'm going to work really hard so that when I come out here for the next outgoing, I'm going to be as 100% ready as I can be. To demonstrate to my team what I'm capable of, to demonstrate to my team that I can come out here and compete with any team in the league. So I just worked the entire time and I had my mindset set that I was just going to come out and have a way better outing," he said. "And that's what I was able to do tonight." Valdez retired the first 12 batters on Wednesday, 8 on grounders, 4 on strikeouts. Devers singled to lead off the fifth, then Valdez bounced the next pitch off J.D. Martinez's leg. The Astros escaped when Hunter Renfroe grounded into a double play and Alex Verdugo bounced out to first. Sale started almost as well, allowing just two hits, both to Alvarez. In his first five innings, but he walked Jose Altuve to start the sixth, then Michael Brantley numbed one toward third. Devers fielded and made the throw in time, but Schwalbe dropped it at first. After sliding into second, Altuve popped up and took off for third, which was uncovered. Brantley moved up to second on a ground foot to the pitcher. Then Alvarez doubled to left, scoring two to make it 3-0 and chasing Sale. Ryan Brasier struck out Carlos Correa before giving up an RBI double to Juli Gurriel and a two-run single to Jose Siri that made it 6-0. Brantley added an RBI single in the seventh, and Gurriel singled in two more in the ninth. Sale was charged with four runs, two earned, on three hits and two walks, striking out seven in 5 1/3 innings. "I was good for five, and then I sucked for one," he said. "I told myself coming into the game I had a job to do. Obviously, didn't get it done, but I left it all out there on that mound tonight. That's for damn sure." The Red Sox had won seven straight postseason games at home, dating to the 2018 ALCS, before blowing an eighth-inning lead on Tuesday night. They had never lost back-to-back postseason games under manager Alex Cora. There is a picture within the text of Astro-designated hitter Jordan Alvarez as he celebrates in the dugout after his second-inning home run in Game 5 of the American League Championship Series on Wednesday in Boston. Alvarez is in full uniform, and it's a chest-to-head photo of him high-fiving somebody else on the team. Saints knockout nights. Class 1A number 8 St. Albert Volleyball started the postseason with a strong win over Fremont Mills on Wednesday night in Council Bluffs, winning 25-9, 25-18, and 25-17. "I felt like we had a great start in the first set," Saints coach Angie Lund said. "We came out very focused, and the girls were really on a mission in that first set. I think we got a little bit too relaxed in the rest of the match, and we know we can't do that going forward after tonight." Saints scored the first 9 points to take early command of set one, and the Knights never recovered from the early deficit as the Saints claimed set one 25-9. The Knights put up a much better fight in set two by taking an early lead and never trailing by any more than 4 points until the midway point of the set, where the Saints went on a 5-1 spurt to create a little more separation and eventually pulled away to win the set 25-18. In set three, the Knight built an early 8-4 lead and was looking to force a fourth set. The Saints chipped away the lead and then played it back and forth in the third set until the team were tied at 16-16. At this point, the Saints went on a 9-1 run to close the game and earn the sweep. "Especially in that second and third set, we were down a bit," senior Lauren Williams said. "Coach told us in the timeout in the third set to just keep our focus and make sure we finish the game strong. We just started focusing on one ball at a time, one play at a time, and we got the win." Williams finished her night with 15 kills and senior Allison Army tailed 12. Other stat leaders for the Saints include senior Maddie Hornbath with 20 assists, Mia Alman had 3 blocks, sophomore Ella Klossman had 4 aces, and Hornbath and Landry Miller co-led the team with 13 digs. The Saints, with the win, advanced to the regional semifinal to host the Sydney Cowgirls, who defeated Stanton in 3 sets. Regardless of who the Saints take on, though, Lance and the Saints know with each win the game only gets more and more difficult. "No matter who we play, it's going to be great competition," Lance said. "It's always great competition at this point of the year. No matter who shows up in the gym, we'll be ready to go." The Saints and Cowgirls will play on Monday at 7 p.m. at St. Albert High School. The winner goes to the regional final. There is 2 pictures included, one above the text showing the Saints girls team number 14, 1, and 17 celebrating, being happy, and then another picture within the text of number one Saints player spiking the ball to the other team. Regional volleyball wrap-up. Trainer Riverside Tri-Center advanced to semifinals. Riverside Volleyball kept its season alive on Wednesday with a victory over Boyer Valley in the quarterfinals of the Class 1A Region 2 quarterfinals at home, 23-13, 25-20, and 25-21. Riverside is now 23-13 on the season and is 2-2 against Boyer Valley since 2018. It was a good win tonight, Riverside head coach Brooke Fleather said. The girls came ready to get a solid start. I thought defensively we took care of things, and our hitters did a good job of finding open shots as the night went on. The effort and hustle we had to win the long rallies is a key takeaway from tonight. Riverside will host Tri-Center in the semifinals at 7 p.m. on Monday. Riverside junior Veronica Anadruskshin led her team with 16 kills, and senior Izzy Blum spiked down 12 more. Freshman Isla Richardson dished out 25 assists, sophomore Alyssa Amdor blocked 4 shots, and sophomore Carly Henderson finished with 10 digs. Richardson surpassed 500 assists in her freshman season. Cardinals advanced to semifinals. Class 2A number 12 trainer volleyball is one step closer to the state tournament after defeating AHSTW on Wednesday in the quarterfinals of the Class 2A Region 2 quarterfinals at home, 25-9, 25-16, 25-12. The Cardinals are now in the semifinals where they'll play Missouri Valley at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at home. Senior Maddie Lewis led trainer in kills with 10, and senior Kaylee Rushles spiked down 8. Lewis also led the Cardinals in digs with 9 and aces with 4. Senior Emma Flathers dishes out 29 assists. Trainer is now 27-7 on the season. AHSTW finished the season with a record of 27-10. Trainer is 25-0 against AHSTW since 2007. Tri-Center defeats East Mills. Class 1A numbers 14, Tri-Center Volleyball advanced to the Class 1A Region 2 semifinals on Wednesday night on the road with a win over East Mills, 25-14, 25-20, 21-25, 25-5. Tri-Center will play at Riverside at 7 p.m. on Monday in the semifinals. It was an emotional night for the Trojans after the loss of a senior classmate today. Tri-Center's head coach Amy Wingert said, "Proud of the girls' ability to focus and preserve. Looking forward to meeting up with the conference rival Riverside on Monday." The Trojans are now 25-10 on the season and are 4-0 against East Mills since 2011. Tri-Center sophomore Mackenzie Brewer led the Trojans with 13 kills, and junior Emily Sorensen contributed 12 more. Senior Miranda Ring dished out 38 assists, junior Presley Arbrow blocked 4 shots, and senior Tatum Carlson finished with 16 digs. Senior Meredith Mason served 4 aces. Underwood eliminated in quarterfinals. Underwood volleyball saw its season come to an end on Wednesday night in the quarterfinals on the Class 2A Region 2 tournament at Underwood in a 5-set thriller, 25-25, 22-25, 25-16, 25-16, 23-25, 15-12. The Underwood Eagles finished the season with a 19-12 record and are now 14-9 against the Lady Reds since 2007. Underwood junior Aliyah Humphrey led her team with 16 kills. Sophomore Elizabeth Jacobson spiked down 14 kills, and sophomore Cassidy Cunningham tailed 10. Junior Delaney Ambrose dished out 35 assists and earned 20 digs, and senior Chloe Clausen blocked 4 shots. And that brings us to the end of today's reading at the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 21st. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris Volunteers love to hear from our listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Patty from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay. Yay!
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.